Yeah, we're gonna stop this video. We're actually gonna mute this.
Parliamentarians. He chimed in 2 days later.
No worries. Okay, so. Okay.
Yeah.
This is what it should look like. We don't want to do.
How are you?
Good.
How are you?
Hi, Marcy.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
But she took the day off, so.
Really rattled how much I get up there from.
Bruce, how are you, sir?
Down again.
Yeah, last night.
Welcome.
Thanks.
I remember.
Good to see you. Marcy, did you get your card?
I did.
No, I mean, we went to dinner, maybe. Oh, we just rented. You have to come and go home. We cooked up in our house that much.
I'd like to see that.
I do.
That's not very much. I know.
I
don't think this one got too much.
We did Lord of the Rings.
Oh, is that when London's on wheels?
Yeah,
that one.
How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good.
Yes.
Still look relatively rested for being.
Yeah. I stagger or leave, so I go back and leave. Like next week or something, so that'll change. She's been the one getting up with baby, not switches.
At least you can be tired.
Yeah, exactly.
When they're moving.
Bad attitude at home. So I have no sleep.
It just seems like.
It is what, it's like 1,000 years in the future.
Yeah, so my wife and I decided to stay. So next week I go back and leave for like 10 weeks, so she's been getting up. Thing at night, so.
Gives you more bonding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like her mom will come out, and then my mom, so basically like 6 months until we put our daughter in childcare, so.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I'm the only female in the house, unless you count the dog, so. And I've never been one for.
Thank you.
Pink or rinky dinky, you know, like romance stuff, so.
Can't ask for more, nothing, no problems at all, so I'm pretty happy.
How are you, Craig?
Good. Good to see you.
Okay.
Too.
Hey, I'm working. Having a child is.
Yeah, she must have like eaten out. How's your legislation coming along? Yeah. I don't know, she's like stressed.
Signature.
How many do you need?
Thank you.
About 300.
And what did you say?
How many do you have?
Oh, I passed that.
Sunny for months.
I like the first one out. It's only sunny for like three. I have until 27.
Just asking.
That's what I'm writing.
I'll take away the.
It's gonna be a day.
Another road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
We get sunlight.
Wow.
Pretty exciting when we see it.
Yeah, not maybe a birthday present, yeah.
Yeah, because this isn't a dietary choice. You know, I'm more strict than.
Yeah.
And that's not.
Although somebody said it was supposed to be 50 on Sunday, so.
Really?
I am.
Oh, thank God, maybe.
I didn't get anything from her.
Yeah, I get all my weather on flxweather.com. That guy is super accurate.
So is it, are the rumors sure it's gonna be actually nice?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, 50, I mean, I don't know.
With 50s, like, something to celebrate and it's nice, you're like, wow.
Sunny in 50, but we might have not four.
Won't know what to do with it, so.
Right.
See, this is what you.
Looking at something. Hey, do you mind, can I call you back in a little bit? I saw your email, so I'll stop by the lab when I get done with the meeting.
Two more days of midwinter chill.
Okay, no problem.
By Friday afternoon.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Thanks.
Hang out.
Three minutes calls for me in the last 5 minutes.
Above normal starting Friday afternoon.
He's from.
I'll take it.
Savannah Park, Czech Republic.
I needed it, I needed some sort of like.
Townhouse.
Yeah. Knew that this was gonna.
Sort of like mental douche, yeah.
So if we don't list.
Yeah.
Afternoon, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how you doing?
So I'm from sitting some way and loves to roll around in the snow. This morning, she was like.
So Sean, will you be staying?
It was so cold, she didn't really like. Yeah, yeah, so. Like she stopped.
That's why I won't be here.
Had to pause and like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I like run her back to the house. It's just that cold. Like she wanted to explore because there was some.
Okay, great.
I think it's either.
Right.
Coyote prints in the snow around the house, and I was like, because I was like, well, it's not another dog because there's no like human prints next to it. And I was like, so I was gonna take a picture and see if it was like boxer a little bit smaller.
We're sitting in there. We're at 13 right now.
Just carry on. Bit bigger.
Yeah.
Definitely not a wolf.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she perks right up at nighttime. She thinks something's outside. You're not going out there.
No, yeah.
Explore that.
I mean, you should have a great. And you could add like 50 miles per hour wind.
I have been.
Sit out there and be like.
Yeah. It was like his climate.
Yeah, I wouldn't have. I've always been had small dogs and when the opportunity came. Like Christine? She's medium sized. I think she's a medium sized.
They're not like huge dogs.
No, she just has two coats.
Yeah, no. And one has to shed off, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, she'll blow that coat here come spring. So.
She hasn't like.
I'm hoping. Managing.
You know, two days, I don't know.
That's why I don't know as far as.
Do they have a coat?
Yeah, so. Because they have like this.
And then when I met her.
Like April or something like that.
Because he never told me. I'm like, I, you know.
Coming out. Yeah, I'm curious.
You know, it's like, I'm sure.
She still gets little knots in that undercoat.
What if it's weird, you know?
Keep it.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's really nice what you can do.
Oh, I see.
I got them, they got off like the end of January. They're in the Bhutan for
a while.
A while. So.
No. They come back in the summer or something?
I have.
They planned it though.
Sherry, do you know if we have anybody on Zoom today?
Yeah. Planned it around her shedding season.
Yeah. Carrie's not here.
She's a sweetheart. And in fact, I go, oh, you know, I just like, I talked to her and she's like.
Anyways, next line, yes.
That's how we used, and she loves my son.
Yeah, I had.
I didn't know if you did or not, so.
Yeah.
Her care, she's great.
Those are good, they're good dogs, like really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She's always been a little careless around other dogs.
Think of the dog park?
Well, I.
Yeah, I am.
Brownies are half baked.
Mine has a.
I figured it had marijuana.
First thing, oh, you're great.
Yeah.
And then.
The instructions said make 40 minutes.
Eleven, when I was 12, she's old. So she sees very well. And then she kind of got a little snarky.
Yeah.
I can't even say that's not good, so.
They kind of get.
I had her presentation.
A little bit of a hand screen. So you could not crazy.
What's that?
It's kind of a. Can you quit? They're in the maintenance work.
Come on. She takes to it.
Somebody.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
She is tolerating it very well. But it's like a puzzle. So I slid the crate underneath. This is kind of scary. I call it her house.
Makes it very helpful. Yeah.
Because I can't. They're weird, like ruined the door. And just so.
I have a dog.
Some blinds.
Yeah, my car.
She was not happy to like be left alone. And I was like. Drop her off and then they like left the country.
Yeah, that's tough.
So far.
We have one dog that loves the crate and one dog that doesn't. So I, you know.
I don't believe her in the crate.
Yeah, me too.
Makes them feel safe.
Yeah, they're secure.
Yeah. And I had two little dogs that I crate trained. People thought of. When I'm in the crate, they just lay down together.
It's like a net mark skinny for dogs now. Yeah. So you've got one dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gets excited.
But specifically in the hospital.
Like at night. So, I mean.
I don't do her at night. She's fine at night. She lays. Yep, she'll lay right in my son's room. Oh, yeah. Just during the day, when we're not there. When we're there, she's totally fine. You know, what does she do? She just basically sleeps.
Yeah, we would have crate trained her earlier. It's a bit of. Or it's a lab period. So she's just a little bit too big. Her in crate that we have. And she doesn't do anything wrong during the day. So, I mean, it's like. Our little apartment's a little bit of a cock. They have a new one. So they're great. Can't get enough. But. They're almost too smart.
Oh, maybe.
Last time we did
it, we
did
a baby too.
Yeah.
We've got a toddler in the house, and then we just had our daughter in the 24th.
Do you remember?
She's, yeah. But, yeah, so Zoom in these for the rest of the spring because my wife is taking her chunk of leave. We both took cars off.
I know.
Discussion about that. I was taking her chunk of leave, and then I'll go on.
Right.
So we need to get there at the moment of finally.
Get her sturdy before we send her off.
Well, just have good thoughts.
Okay.
What a podcast.
Yeah, we have a big guy.
Where's he doing it?
I don't know. Just here.
Bye.
So good afternoon, everybody. It is 12:15, and the weather is still winter in Ithaca, as many of you had the opportunity to experience walking over here. So thank you for making the trip. Spring, believe it or not, is around the corner. So,
in 2 months.
Yeah, in July. So we're very happy to have with us today Dr. Michael Hoffman, and we'll turn the floor to him in just a moment. The first thing we needed to do was to approve the minutes from the last three meetings. At this point, we don't have a quorum, so we will be approving the meetings for the next four meetings at our next meeting. If that makes
unless
sense.
Unless people arrive late.
Yeah, unless folks arrive late and we can do it later in the yeah. agenda.
Is it possible to approve online just to do a vote that way at some point?
I don't see any reason why not. So maybe we can just go ahead and.
I don't think it's in our bylaws.
Mm.
Yeah. The votes can accumulate over
but is
time.
It not in our bylaws?
I think it is in our bylaws.
That you can. Okay.
It's fine. You can send it out and just say vote.
So when you all see an email from our parliamentarian, Kevin.
Spots up to the name.
So. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Michael Hoffman. He's a professor here at Cornell, and he is going to give us a talk about the National Climate Assessment and the IPCC reports. So, Dr. Hoffman, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity. And actually, my talk will vary just a little bit from what you just said, but I think we'll be okay.
Great.
It's included in there. I do a lot of public speaking about this topic. And I was at Science on Tap at North Star last Wednesday and got everybody depressed. I think part of it was the beer, I'm not sure. But I'll try not to do that again, given the nature of this topic. I'd also like to thank you for the resolution you passed. It is really, really important to help all of us be climate change literate. I think you're aware the students have done that as well early this year. They passed the resolution. So to start, on a scale of 1 to 10, the topic is climate change. Now, 1, not a big deal, really don't care. 5, I'm a little about it, I like to know more. 10, I'm really concerned. How many 1s? Any 5s? 10s? This is usually when I say I don't have to give this talk. So what I want to do is, this is open, ask questions anytime. I've got a couple dozen slides, I'll go through them rather quickly, cover some of the basics, the evidence that's all around us, and then switch to solutions, things we can do. I'll also give an example of something that I've done on campus that I'll share with you as an example of what really is possible. So I think it's good to start with the truth. I like this quote from Edward Abbey, better a cruel truth than a comfortable delusion. Next slide. Next slide. What says it? Do I need to hold, am I on camera? Or do I need to, can I move around?
You can move around.
Wherever you want.
So what is that?
The first picture taken of the Earth from the Apollo 11.
I like to call it, you're all right.
Home.
Next slide. Carl Sagan says it very well. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark, and our obscurity and all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from somewhere, from elsewhere, to save us from ourselves. Southwest. So I think you're all aware of climate change, but just to emphasize, this is the troposphere. This is the little blanket we live in. It's about 5 miles, 6 miles right here. That's it. It isn't infinite. Solar radiation comes down, hits a snowy field or cold day like this in Ithaca. Most of that energy, assuming it gets through the clouds, hits the snow, is reflected back up. But if it hits a nice black surface, it actually warms that up. Radiant energy goes back up, encounters greenhouse gases. They absorb that, re-radiate it back. They're insulating the planet. The trouble is, we're making that blanket denser by putting more and more greenhouse gases in that blanket. Next slide. Sure, we've all seen the hockey stick. Year 1000, the current times, about here, Industrial Revolution, we started burning a lot of fossil fuel and pumping greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. This is CO2, which is the most dominant and most potent and long-lasting. And you can see we've added a lot of CO2, we're about 40% higher than we should be. We're currently at 411 parts per million, and every time I give a talk, I check, because it's creeping up. I think last year was a record over 3.8 parts per million added, which was a surprise. If we continue, we'll hit 900 parts per million, and it'll be really warm here, about 2 months above 90 during the summer in the Northeast. The experts agree, and no, it's not natural. There's all kinds of things that cause natural variables. Go back. I'm sorry, I'm just...
Gotcha.
You know, volcanoes cause cooling. The sun gives out more energy at times. That's not happening right now. We circle the sun in an ellipse, so we're closer to the sun at times. None of that is happening. We are the cause. Okay. The next way to look at this is think about bathtubs. Essentially, the drain is the natural processes that take greenhouse gases, absorb the ocean, the plants, and the faucet prior to the Industrial Revolution was in balance with the drain. But now we've cranked up the faucet and the drain is the same size. So the bathtub is filling up. The atmosphere is filling up with greenhouse gas. Next slide. Those aren't my legs. We're just come from all the things we enjoy. Transportation. There happens to be over 1 billion cars on the planet. Motor vehicles on the planet. We like to fly 100,000 flights a day. Just a little anecdote. For a while last summer, some planes could not take off from the Phoenix airport. It was simply too high to give them the lift they need to take off. So transportation is a big contributor, 26%, electricity 30%, industry 21%, and agriculture often takes a bad rap. These are US figures, but in the US, it's about 9%, globally twice that. Next slide. So to summarize, we gained about 2 degrees Fahrenheit. It's warming actually about 3 times faster at the poles. The last 4 years were the hottest ever recorded. It'll take a long time to turn this puppy around, even if we behave today. And just because this comes up often, we distinguish between global warming, climate change, and weather. Global warming is we're adding more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. The atmosphere is warming up. That is global warming, just temperature. It's warming up. The consequence of that is the climate is changing, and the climate includes weather, melting glaciers, warming oceans, etc. It's like San Diego is balmy this time of the year, Chicago blustery. Summers are changing, but climate in the area is changing. And weather is what's happening out there right now, today, short term. So always bear in mind when someone says, well, look how cold it is, that's the weather. Climate change, you need to look at decades and decades. The evidence all around us, we're in the big melt. Glaciers worldwide, with a few exceptions, are melting. I did a TEDx talk. And I found this beautiful picture of a glacier, just ideal. When we learned at the last minute that it was one of the glaciers on the planet that's actually growing, we didn't use that. But this is a big deal for food, agriculture. In Peru, we get about $4 billion worth of vegetables and fruit a year from Chile and Peru. The glaciers in the Andes are actually melting faster right now because it's warmer, so they've got extra irrigation water, but those glaciers will disappear in time and have a huge impact on agriculture in that part of the world. The glacier meltwater is also important for hydroelectric power. Some countries like Bolivia get about 60% of their energy from hydro, dependent on glacier meltwater. That's going to change. Up here is, I said this, Arctic. Pole, the Arctic in this case, is warming three times as fast. The white area is summer sea ice towards the end of the summer, when the sea ice is at its smallest extent. The yellow line is where it should be. But because the Arctic is warming, there's less summer sea ice. That open area between the yellow line and the ice is about 700,000 square miles. The bigger than the state of Alaska, which is now absorbing that sunlight, warming up, melting the ice. You get it. In time, there won't be any summer sea ice in the Arctic. Oceans are rising, warm water expands, thermal expansion, as well as contributions from melting ice bodies on land. We gained about 8 inches so far. Doesn't sound like a big deal, but it was actually a really big deal when Hurricane Sandy hit, because it just, the storm surges were just that much higher. Upper left, I don't think it was mentioned, I'm actually an entomologist, sort of. Hiking in the Rockies, saw these dead trees, took a while, but then it sunk in. Those are dead because of park beetle populations have exploded. Long-term drought, stressing the trees, it's warmer, beetles reproduce more, more generations. Winters are warming, they survive more, and they're decimating literally millions of acres of trees in the West, which lends itself to fires. And food. We're actually writing a book, Our Changing Menu, What Climate Change Means to the Foods We Eat and Love, like beer and wine. That one. People get really upset when you talk about messing with their coffee. But that's the whole point. Can we connect climate change to people's beliefs and action through food? Chocolate is another one, cacao in Western Africa. Anybody ever heard of the angel share? When you're, they cure bourbon and a lot of other really good stuff in barrels, typically in out-of-door conditions. And historically, they lose about 2% every year simply to evaporation through the oak. It's warming up. Well, they call that the angel share. It's like, thank you. It's okay. We're glad to contribute that to the angel to help us with our production process. But it's warming up, and the angel is taking more and more. Lots of stories here. That's the whole point. I'm not going to spend any more time, but lobsters move north off the coast of Maine because of warming temperatures. Wine grapes are really sensitive to changes, which actually could be an opportunity for us right here. We could actually expand red grape production. So there's a story in food about climate change. Next one. A look into the future. Upper left, if you see that gray band and the lower axis from the 1850s to about current times, each point on that line is the average annual temperature for a year. And they fall within that gray band. By about 2050, worst case scenario, the coldest average temperature for a year will be warmer than anything in the previous couple hundred years, essentially moving into a new regime. Water, I'm going to point out this was changes in water water towards the end of the century. See right here in the blue, we will actually have water here, which some of us think is a big advantage for agriculture. The rest of the country is going to get very dry. Lots of changes. Wet areas will get wetter, drier areas drier across the globe. Next slide. And the IPCC report, essentially, they were asked, this group was asked to come up with solutions to maintain the warming to 1.5 or 2 degrees centigrade. Basically said we really got to do some radical things to make that happen. Natalie Mahawald, faculty member here, actually just testified in Congress and was part of this. I've heard a couple of her seminars. She said, yeah, nice try, but we're going right past that. That's like, anybody seen this beer in the marketplace? I can't find it anymore. But you know, all that has to be true if there's someone trying to make a dime off of it and calling a beer global warmer. But the message on the back is actually very good. It's seasonal. I have no idea why. Brewed in Brooklyn, but on the back, extended refrigeration at retail magnifies beer's carbon footprint. Drink up quickly. Excellent. Okay. I ask myself this. People often say, well, what can I do? Well, this is one option. I don't think it's going to help anybody much. So, what I want to do in just the next few minutes is just offer some ideas This is based on things in the literature, my own experience. But you've taken a really big step with your resolution on climate change literacy. I think it's really, really important for all of us to be aware of what is happening. So that the climate literate person understands the basic principles of climate change, the impacts, the cost, how to assess credible information, and communicate about it and make informed decisions. But this is really a question, how can the employee simply help make that happen across the campus? Sustainability is already in every position description on campus. And I'll take blame for that or credit for that. I actually walked in to talk to Mary Opperman and says, can we do this? And she said, sure. Boom. It's at the top of all of our job descriptions. Next slide. Believe it or not, the first thing to do is start talking about it. Some suggestions. This is from Kathy Hayhoe, who is the rock star of climate change communication. Things to keep in mind, it's the consensus is solid. You always include solutions in your personal life, where you work, the benefits. Hey, if we did this, we could save money. Hey, if we did this, it would help with personal well-being. Don't use too many facts. Actually use emotion, shared values. Don't use fear. I think that's what happened at Science on Tap the other night. I just downloaded a little much bad, too much bad news. And once you start talking about that, others start talking, it becomes more the norm. Next slide. In having that conversation, I've had many of these, and I'll share a couple experiences towards the end here, but if you're with someone who's maybe having a difficult time with this, just listen. Ask a few questions and simply listen. Try to connect it to the price of coffee, more storms, something that people can relate to. It's called psychological distance. If you talk about melting glaciers in the Arctic, the year 2100, I'll be dead. So try to bring it home. Do this for the sake of the employees and make it a conversation, not an argument. Be patient, plant seeds, and don't be combative. That'll end the dialogue. I have the one experience I'm going to share is traveling on a flight. Yes, I was burning fossil fuels. London. And when you're with somebody on the plane, you got a captive audience. So this gentleman and I were about the same vintage, and we started to chat. And he asked, well, what do you do? I said, I work in climate change. And he leaned over and he said, and I voted for fill in blank. That's okay. The conversation didn't deteriorate. Turns out he was a CEO and founder of a textile company. He said, let me tell you a couple of things. There is an annual winter sportswear convention in Las Vegas every year. Attendance is off 60%. It's getting warmer. Our company used to focus on winter attire. We don't anymore. We focus on summer attire. And just today, I was asked, so silkworms. All of our staple crops, wheat, potatoes, rice, have actually declined in vitamins, some elements, zinc and iron, and protein. That's a big deal worldwide. I got an email. So what's it doing to silkworms and silk? Who did I email? My buddy, David. He says, yeah, I don't know, but I got a buddy in Korea. We'll find out. The dialogue continues. Next slide. I'm sure you're aware of the resources available to everyone at Cornell, their staff training. There's actually something coming up on April 3 and 4 on sustainability and climate change. I participate in some of that. Green teams, maybe individuals here are part of that, very active, even leading some. Another opportunity. their efforts, and I'm sure you're more aware than this than I, but flexible work schedules, remote conferencing, et cetera, to help us minimize our travel but still do our jobs. They're safe. These are all topics on the website, the sustainability website site, and then saving at home, energy, transportation, food, et cetera. So these, this information is available to help all of us change and reduce our greenhouse gas footprint. Okay, next slide. Okay, here's the example. So I was director of the Cornell University Agricultural Experiment Station for 10 years. That is not the one in Geneva. There's actually one here on campus, 55 staff, all the greenhouses, plant growth chambers, well over 150. These are refrigerators that have controlled temperature, lighting, or big walk-in rooms where you can grow insects and plants. We have lots of forested property, the compost facility, and we're there to support students, research, teaching, and extension. And I had money. This is a really energy-intensive operation. So, next slide. So, we adopted a culture of sustainability. Established a team, well, I put it this way. More than once, when we'd all get together, I would talk about climate change and how we can help as an organization. How we could also work together to reduce costs, to save the college money. And everybody was given a greater purpose, not just 9 to 5 or 6 to 4, whatever, because these are farms and greenhouses, sometimes they work around the clock. And it provided them the why. Cost, saving the planet, personal well-being, provided a vision that was shared. Next slide. So one part of this was creating a sustainable action team. It enabled them to come together once a month, a group of about a dozen, to brainstorm on how they could do things better. And I'll share what they did in a few things in a minute. Their ideas were welcomed. If they needed money, I could typically provide it. They were recognized, and we shared the accomplishments. I was engaged nationally, and I told this story many times to the other experiment station directors across the country. And I think we created a model. Next slide. Some examples. Planted 8,000 trees. I didn't tell anybody to do any of this. It came from the ground up. They switched from one kind of irrigation to another to the drip line, saving 70% in water use. They had team building events, took down an old building, had them ready to fall down, did a number of other things. Put signage up. This is one of the greenhouses that cost $32,500 a year to operate. Please tell us when you're done so we can change the temperature. But one of the more interesting things are these growth chambers that I mentioned earlier. They designed one that typically used, this is, believe it or not, that's the refrigerator size, cost about $3,300 a year to run. And they said, we can build a better one. They built one that cost $300 a year to run. It's elegant. They've also done, now, more recently, these large ones that cost $35,000 a year to run. They cost about $3,000 a year to run. And multiply that times dozens and dozens of these around campus. Towards the end of this initiative, and when I was leaving the experiment station, I asked the director of operations, how many people really get this? That we really need to do this? And he said, 4 out of 5, which I thought was pretty good. And it continues today. I just contacted the same individual, and they are looking at 40 new chambers designed this way, which would be an enormous savings to the college. Next slide. And one last process. I'm sure most of you are aware of the lean process, looking at things and doing more efficiently. This is the team that got together. All I did was welcome them. It was all organized. They got students, they got team builders in there. So here's the greenhouse complex up near the Vet College. They essentially eliminated 25,000 square feet of greenhouse, saving the college anywhere between $160,000 and $212,000 a year in energy costs. and 75,000 electricity. Those facilities are gone. Next slide. So we all can help. This is, without getting anybody depressed, this is a really, really big challenge. And there's a lot of ways to solve it. One person can only do so much, so I'll suggest we start small. But Bill McKibben says, push for things that really matter. You're not alone. This is, I like this next one. Find one thing you can do best and go for it. Get involved. I mean, I don't know. Does the employee assembly have a green team or a subcommittee that focuses on? Maybe you do. And the big one is raise your voice. Get involved in any way you can. And make it personal. These are my daughters. See, 06, 10, Cornell. You see that? So what are they going to say about dad in 2050? Maybe we're not going to solve it. But letting them know that we tried. I think that's it. Thank you. Questions? Counter arguments? If things are slow, I tell jokes, so be careful.
Nancy, then Karen?
If you had one book to recommend to a layperson, first-year student, or me, what would you recommend?
I sure wish our book was ready. Don't get the one I just bought as the, what's the latest? Uninhabitable Earth or something like that. I can, what if I do this? There's a bunch of them, but there's like Climate Change 101 type thing. I can share it with somebody and you can, how's that?
That would be great.
Karen?
So you said you have a model. Is that scalable to other units across campus?
Sure.
And would you share that?
Oh, I'm sorry. What I described was the model, people being empowered.
Okay.
And I took that model across the country and shared with other experiment station directors. So I think, I mean, even today, the staff, the sustainable action team still meet. I left there 3 years ago, but it's continuing. They're still coming up with ideas. Right now, they're looking at individuals doing literature reviews on something they're passionate about, like biological control in greenhouses, and they come back and they submit a proposal. There's a little bit of money in the pool. Did I answer your question?
Sort of. So I work at the law school, and if I wanted to set up some sort of a sustainable action team, would I look to the team that you created?
No, the campus sustainability office, they head up the green teams, they organize that, all of that.
So does each college have a green team?
No. Engineering has one, human ecology, the vet college, there may be others. I mean, it's still quite open. And some of those started and kind of waned. You know, they've done something in that.
And then for the, you mentioned the lean process and you made things more efficient. Was there any kind of negative impact in that? Like, for example, job loss? Is it like people like, oh, we made everything so efficient. We are using 25,000 square feet less of something. Does that mean we need less people to run things? Or?
They still needed to do the same amount of work. They were just doing it in a smaller space. But clearly that came up right away. Well, what if, you know, hey, we're going to downsize. So there goes a job or two. That did not happen. But it was definitely, I think, on the minds of the organizers when it all started. And as far as any of this, like the green team, just contact me or I'll, it's the sustainability office is a point of contact.
So my perception locally is that Ithaca is a community that on the whole is very focused on sustainability issues. And my perception is also that politically on the national level, that there's quite a bit of skepticism. And I'm curious from, you've talked about the folks that have met with Congress and so forth. What are some of the messages that are being shared with them at that level that, you know, as you presented to us, the evidence is obvious, the evidence is clear, I agree. I'm just wondering, why is there still such a gap or my perception of a gap between the reality and decisions like leaving the Paris Climate Accord, yeah, those type of things at the national level.
It's all about tribes. My tribe believes they don't. They're not going to leave their tribe because, you know, they leave their friends, they leave their relationships. I'm kind of oversimplifying it, not because that's as much as I understand, but it's just, it's politicizing. Although, as I follow the press, I'm hearing, well, the one experience that Natalie had when she went and testified, she did it 3 years ago, and she said she had 4 to 6 essentially deniers in the audience, members of Congress. This time she had 2. I don't know if that's progress or not,
yeah,
but I think it's becoming more and more obvious. And, you know, the sense is it's like so obvious that people are starting to accept it. We still have a long way to go. Did I answer?
Yes, thank you. It's challenging regardless, yeah.
But that's when you come and make it personal. I mean, I've had people walk up and said, Mike, you nailed it. Talking about my kids. I've had a lot of experiences. Some gentleman came up to me and said, just stared me in the face. Huh, I'll be dead. 2100. I said, you have grandkids? That was it. Didn't say a word.
Don't I have a quick question. So being at, you know, Cornell University, you know, we're a leader and stuff. Do you feel that the university should be doing more as a whole? I mean, we see a university assembly as the, we're supposed to be zero neutral by 2035. New buildings are going up now that, you know, look at these efficiencies and stuff. But do you think we're kind of dragging? Because you had asked, what can the employee assembly do? And I think that is one of the places that we could, you know, assist quicker, is to, you know, see if we can get the university to do more.
This is actually a pretty impressive institution. It was just the grand opening of the new community solar farm. I've seen it once, and they're supposed to welcome everybody. I'm also on the president's sustainable campus committee and something like that. But with lake source cooling, with deep rock engineering, these are like way out there, innovative. And new buildings have to be energy efficient, so on and so forth. Could we do more? Sure. But in a relative sense to a lot of other campuses, Cornell is leading the way. The one thing that I really don't think any student should graduate from Cornell without being climate change literate. Mm-hmm. It's so important to their future. And that one bugs me.
So, question about the hype of all of the electric cars and hybrids. How eco-friendly is to produce this technology? You know, like, because a lot of people say, oh, I can now drive a hybrid, so I am going to become friendlier towards the environment. But I heard reports where it's really polluting the environment to switch, you know? So it's like, you're going to lose regardless. You have to change your lifestyle, you know?
I don't know the sort of the technical answer, the life cycle analysis of electric cars. I've heard that too, but I really can't give you any hard data. But that, you're asking a really good question, because you always need to step back and say, recycling. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some arguments that from a carbon standpoint, just put it in the landfill,
right?
If you look at someone picking it up and all that sort of thing. But that's a really good question. Oftentimes pause and say, wait a minute, you know, does this really make sense?
So I drove past that solar farm for the first time yesterday. It's enormous.
Yeah, 126 acres.
Yeah, it's crazy. What do you say to the neighbors across the street who are now looking at this? It's an eyesore. I mean, it's not pretty. It's impressive, but I wouldn't want to open my front door and look at it. So how do you mesh with those kinds of concerns?
You realize all of the intense dialogue that has occurred over the last many months related to that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, how do you convince people who are going to be directly impacted by...
Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
that's a challenge. I certainly wouldn't want a giant wind turbine, you know, 200 yards behind my house, because it's nice and quiet right now.
Yeah.
So should I be a hypocrite or what?
Craig, could I?
I think.
Could I offer just a comment, Craig? Is that a?
Yeah, just a second, Jeremy. Professor Hoffman was answering questions.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I think we all have to look at the bigger picture. We all shouldn't drive as much. We also fly in planes, and if that's going to be in our neighborhood, I think we just have to do our best to accept it. I'm a proponent of nuclear energy. A lot of people don't like that. Uh-huh. Because from a carbon standpoint, it's still a good bet.
Yeah.
I always thought telephone poles were an eyesore, but we all use them.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, please.
So I apologize for interrupting. I just wanted to speak. I actually do live directly across from one of the solar installations, the one on Dodge Road. I've been very much a part of the local conversations on those installations. And while there, of course, is some concern and some pushback, particularly from local residents who have lived there with the same kind of environment for 40, 50 years, I think there's also a general acceptance that this is a necessary change to our environment. And I think there's a general acceptance, while there might be individual concerns with a specific project, is a general appreciation acceptance of having those installations there. So I would say, yes, there is a little bit of the NIMBY. We get over that pretty quickly. There's a little bit of concern about projects, but I think that, and maybe Ithaca is a bit unique in this, our neighborhood at least has come to the point where we've accepted the installation, and really there's some the counterbalance of the value that it provides is significantly more than the negative impact on our local neighborhood.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Hi, I have a question about Cornell's carbon neutral commitment. Are we still committed to that? Because that was the agenda of the last president. Is this president still committed to the carbon neutral by 2035?
Yes, she is.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one question when you guys have a chance.
All right. Kate, then Carrie.
Okay. Just a comment about the public process. Of course, the farms all required municipal approvals, so there was this incredibly intense dialogue and approval process in which changes were made. So there were additional setbacks made. There were green buffers.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's great, and I'm glad it's there, but I'm also glad I don't live across the street. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're also going to graze under the panels and try to maintain biodiversity for pollinators and insects. There's some folks in my department, as well as Mike Toomey, the sheep guy at Cornell.
Kate, excuse me, Carrie.
Yeah, hi. Actually, I have two things, if we have time. Just to, I guess, loop back around to Craig's original question about, the national landscape. And I'm going to out myself a little bit as maybe a partial skeptic. And I'll just say, you know, I really do appreciate sustainability. I just love anything that can be done to make things more efficient. And see that savings, energy savings, cost savings, whatever. So I'm a definite proponent of that, but I guess there are some issues that I am skeptical about, things like the Paris Agreement and maybe more global, multilateral international agreements, that kind of thing. And I guess, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and one of my like burned in memories is being told that the ozone layer was disappearing and the sun was going to just burn us all up. And so when I think about why people are skeptical, I think about that and how there was this just amazing scare factor, fear factor that I'll just never forget it. And now you don't hear anything about the ozone layer. It's actually regenerating or something. But you know, that's the kind of thing I think of when I wonder, you know, where is the disconnect? And I wanted to just say, Professor Hoffman, I really appreciate that you present this stuff without that sort of intense fear mongering. I think that tends to throw a lot of people off, because it just goes so far one way, swinging of the pendulum, where it's like doom and gloom and doomsday sort of stuff. So I really do appreciate how you presented all this. But my question actually was related to how you were saying we need to make it personal to people. And when you were talking about that, the very first thing that popped into my head is, at least as it applies to campus, transportation and parking. And, you know, there are a lot of people that work at Cornell that aren't in the science and engineering, like they can't invent a new refrigeration system. Like I would never have the ability to do that. But that, you know, the drive around looking for parking spots would probably love to have an easier way, a more efficient way, that didn't involve using their cars the way that they do. So I'm wondering if you could report back at all on any of the confluence between your group, the activities of the sustainable, I can't remember, the action pack you have going on, and the transportation review, and whether there are conversations to be had, whether there's anything ongoing where we could be pushing some transportation and parking solutions that would also make the campus more sustainable. That was all. Sorry, that was pretty long-winded.
Okay. Two things. Ozone was simple. One compound by one company, they stopped. What we're in now is far more complicated. Transportation is actually one of the biggest contributors to our overall contribution to greenhouse gases at Cornell. It's we do have a relatively good bus service. There's efforts to help with carpooling. And again, I can circle back to this group because I know they have a plan or suggestions for everybody. Ride share. I mentioned occasionally working from home. I have tried multiple times to contact our Office of Conference Organization, the people that help convene conferences, because I think we ought to be doing far more virtual conferences. And actually, there's a lot of advantages. It blows me away when you stop and think you can do these things in multiple languages. They're global. You can answer questions for a day and a half instead of 10 minutes. Anyway, let me see if I can offer you, at the experiment station, we did not focus on transportation that much because it wasn't a big part of our operation. But I can share what Cornell has and recommendations about helping us all with transportation issues. Okay?
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Professor Hoffman, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time.
Sure. And at any point with any of these topics, I think you know where I work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And we will go through Adam with regard to contacting for Karen's question on green teams and find out what colleges are actually participating, where there are areas that we might be able to find some action to pursue through our representatives. So the next item on our agenda is the floor turned over to Nancy Doolittle.
So I just wanted, after our last meeting where I sort of like answered the question with blah, 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 I'm retiring, to maybe give a little more background and some look forward. And it's very briefly, but I am retiring. My last day of work is March 29th. My first day of retirement is April Fool's Day. I'm hoping this isn't a joke on me. I have been thinking about this for about a year. I turned 66 in November, which makes me the full Social Security age. More important than that, my partner is 75. So if we're going to do anything ambitious, now's the time. We aren't doing anything ambitious this summer because we have two old cats who are 18 years old and kind of need us around. But I have so many remodeling projects that I only got as far in my house, as far as where it was livable, and then I went on to the next one. That'll take me all summer to complete. I was going to retire at the beginning of this semester so that the Chronicle would have downtime and time to fill my position. When my colleague George died in December, that accident, of which I was one of the two people who found him, that was unsettling enough that I thought, I just can't go through this kind of transition at this point. And it just seemed better to postpone it for as long as I could. So now this means that I'm retiring at the busiest time of our schedule and most of the rest of us. We are looking at at first I thought I could freelance, but then we found out you can't have a W-2 form and a 1099 form or whatever it is in the same year, blah, blah, blah. But I could go as a casual employee. So we're looking at that so that I can continue to write the staff stories from now through the end of the semester. And that'll give us a transition period. In the meantime, you will soon hear about other new communication initiatives that are going to be started up, partly as a result of responding to the staff survey and the need for better communications. So you will hear about those. And the people that you can look to for the future of carrying the importance of staff and internal communication forward, Melissa Schaffmaster and Savannah Whiting over in University Relations, along with Carrie Sansone, who's been hard at work on web stuff. And then, of course, Ashley Fazio and the other communicators across campus. So there is quite a bit of attention being given to staff communications. And the people like Savannah, who are, I hate to say this, but it's true, much younger and therefore more energetic, because I am just feeling worn out. it's time for them to bring forth their new ideas and start to bring new energy to this. So that's my little sort of half personal, half professional thing. advice I would give to you, two things. One, retiring is more complicated than getting hired. this Social Security, Medicare stuff and all is the most complicated thing that I have dealt with in a long time. Two, way back, well, not way back, but far enough back so that I realized that I wasn't putting away enough for retirement in the supplemental, but didn't really feel like I could afford to put any more than I was. The benefits people gave me a great piece of advice, which is to say, they said, okay, all you really need to do, especially in a period of low inflation, is to take the little bit that you get in the salary improvement program and sock that away, because you've made that, you know, that income for this long, you're not going to notice that little bit if you continue it. And then for as many years as you can, and that will build up and it won't be so excruciating. So if you can do that, I would recommend it so that you aren't 66 when you're retiring, so that you might retire at 62 or something. And or like my partner did, who's played golf for the past 14 years. But that's it.
Okay. That's it. Well, Nancy, thank you so much for your service to Cornell in so many ways, as a communicator, as a colleague. We have certainly appreciated you being part of our assembly and all that you've done across campus and connecting so many of us in so many ways. I know that you're going to have a celebration down the road, and there will be more time for talking and remembering, but we certainly appreciate all you've done for us.
Well, certainly you all keep me grounded as to why I'm here. So.
I'd like to also ask Pam Hampton to please give an announcement that's not on the agenda.
So this morning I was offered a position in the Center for Regional and Economic Advancement as a project associate. So my last day in this role will actually be 2 weeks from today. I'll be able to attend at least one more meeting with you on the 20th, and I'll start the following day at that center. So I'm really looking forward to a more outward facing role. We've been so focused on the internal operations and communications of the university, but I'd love to be able to help make some connections externally into the community and help support our region in terms of growth and development, and see how, you know, Cornell can partner. So I'm so grateful for the opportunity I've had over the past 2 years to work with you in this role. This is the only assembly that I actually attend on a regular basis. All the other assemblies have wonderful people like Sheree that are the clerks, but as an employee myself, I've just found a particular affinity. So it's nice to come and be able to participate and hear your voices and have a sense of kind of keeping my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the university. So who knows, you know, I mean, there is an EA election coming up. If I get a wild hair, I might bring myself back to the table and have a little placard that I can, you know, raise up. But that's maybe not. We'll see. But it will be an interesting transition. So thank you.
Thank you for all your time. Really appreciate all that you've done for the assembly and advising us and guiding us. We've been going through these processes, and we wish you all the best in your new role.
Thank you.
With that, I would like to transition to committee reports. Carrie, are you still with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Do you have anything from communications and awards?
Just a couple things. So we met last week. A combo communications and awards review task force. We ripped that off last week. Notes from that are going to go out today on the list. And we agreed to meet for our awards review on a monthly basis and do some work in between via email and stuff. So hopefully keep plugging away at that. But that was a really good meeting. We were lucky. We had Ashley Fazio join us, and she's gonna be helping on that group as well. So let's see. What are the other things? So that's percolating. Chris Barth is going to be our point person for elections communications. So he's the man. He's going to be working on helping with the finalize the calendar, marketing plan, marketing communications plan, that kind of thing. Nancy's going to help us out with a first stab at a transportation progress report based on information that Christine has provided and the ideas that we'll be sharing that out to all staff. And I'm going to say that's it.
Thank you very much, Carrie. Any questions, Carrie? No. Okay. Arla is not here today. Is there anybody from the education committee that have any updates? You mentioned that still trying to get some feedback from HR on a question, but is there anything else that would like to be added?
We haven't met.
Okay. Thank you. The welfare committee, Andrea.
Yes, we've met recently. We've agreed to monthly meetings. We've got a meeting scheduled for next week and Tuesday. We've asked members of our subcommittee to attend the March 20th EA meeting with Chantel Clary, talking about the collaborations with the Title IX office.
So okay.
Hopefully we'll have a number of people participate there. And then we're just working on a couple of other initiatives. I don't know, do you want to talk a little, about the collaborations with the Title IX office?
Yeah.
For representation? Yeah. That happened today.
Yeah, just today, Chantel Clear from the Title IX office has reached out to the EA to ask if we could send a representative over to work with them as they review the training that they've been providing to faculty and staff members. So I think this will be, you know, a small group that's going to incorporate different voices from across the campus to really look at the ways that we've been training people in terms of, you know, our, you know, policies and trainings, and then work towards creating something new and then discussing some areas to focus on in the future. So I think this is a good example of how, you know, working with other units, we've been able to create this collaborative partnership outside of, you know, any sort of resolutions or anything sort of like making demands. I think it's really in the spirit of partnership and collaboration with other units. So I'm really happy that they've asked the EA to be a part of that. Yeah,
awesome.
And I had recommended to see if Hey had time and energy to do that. I think she's the perfect person, given all of the breadth and depth of experience that she's had. So,
thank you very much, Andrea. Transportation Committee, Christine is not here. Is there anybody from the committee that would like to provide any updates? Okay, Tarek has also had to leave early for the Benefits and Policy Committee. Any updates from this committee?
Yes,
David.
We met, what was it, 2 weeks ago? And we had Alan Bishop and Lauren Jacoby come and talk to us about the time off policy. And currently there's talk about three options on when do we start ratcheting up the extra week that you get at 10 years now. So they want to start it at 0 years, and then whether or not you do it all at once, once every other year, or
is this the step ladder?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember what the third one was, but it's another step portion. And then we also talked about transportation, and that was quite the topic to talk about it, the Benefits and Policy Committee. I don't believe that there was any headway with it, and pretty much Alan, I think, walked away going, this really isn't a HR benefit, and there's nothing we can control with it. So there's we have been invited to the next Transportation Committee meeting on March 18th, so I think a lot of us will go to that.
Okay.
Has everybody else been invited from the EA, or is it just the committee?
Not aware.
Okay. Well, there's a transportation committee on the 18th.
Okay.
Feel free to come.
Right. Awesome.
And that's about it.
And due to the fact that were you able to attend yesterday evening's UA meeting?
I was.
Do you have any updates from me that you'd like to share since I'm in the spot?
Let's see, we talked about Title IX, Mary's, I'll call it dog and pony, gathering for, core values that she did the same thing with us.
Oh, okay.
Feedback on that. And then she talked about the Title IX changes that they're trying to go for or go with, specifically policy 6.4. Mm-hmm. There is a draft out there, but she's not willing to share it, but she will once all of the faculty committee comes to consensus on the draft.
We're having, I believe, that update at our next meeting from Vice mm-hmm. President Opperman.
So you'll hear the same thing.
Okay.
There was one other, and I'm sorry, I can't think of what the other one was.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So put you on the spot there.
The other one was Lauren Clarkberg with the Middle States.
Oh, but she actually didn't come.
Well, she couldn't.
She didn't. But you've also heard the, we've heard that one already. Yeah.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Hey.
So yes, Mary Opperman will be coming on March 20th to present on policy 6.4, which is how the university provides a means to address bias, discrimination, harassment, sexual and related misconduct. So she's going to present first, and then we're going to have Chantel Cleary from the Title IX office present as well. And also March 30th, Cornell is participating in an Earth Hour. So on the topic of climate change and sustainability, the request is that any employees here at 8:30, if you're here, please turn off non-essential lights to fight climate change and promote sustainability. So if you're here at 8:30, March 30th, for an hour, turn off your lights at 8:30 to 9:30. If there are any requests for presentations, that would be really great. After March 20th, we don't have any other presentations lined up. So if you have any ideas, any suggestions for any presentations you want or any people you want me to reach out to have them present here, then that would be really greatly appreciated. So March 20th is the last presentation that we have scheduled. So that's it.
Okay. Couple announcements. Well, I guess it's really just one announcement. As a reminder, March 20th, that afternoon, so we'll have our EA meeting that day, but also that afternoon, the Executive Committee of the Board of Trustees has invited the entire assembly to join them for a reception over at the Row Room in the Statler. So I would encourage you all to plan to attend if you're able. Last year's reception was really a nice opportunity to speak with them about topics of interest to our assembly, as well as just kind of discuss issues that were relevant at the time around campus. If you do have specific things that you would like to bring to their attention that you're aware of now, I would encourage you to please forward those to Hey so that we can have that information shared with the executive committee. I don't know if the names of those that were on the executive committee from last year have changed, but I'll try to find out exactly who will be in attendance so you can take a look at those individuals before that meeting. Okay. Are there any questions from anybody on Zoom or within the room?
You know, Jeremy did follow up with a comment. Jeremy, do you want to read your comment?
No, that's fine. I'm just sharing for the, it was again related to the earlier conversation on the solar installations. That's because that's been going, I've been involved in that for over a year now with our local community. One of the things that I found we took away from that is a real sense of pride and appreciation for the developers who have met directly with the residents in the neighborhood, taken in our concerns, and actually changed the build plan from what they started with to something that is more palatable to the local residents. It still isn't as good as the ag fields that were there, but I think we appreciate the efforts that were put in to adjust the plan to suit us.
So let me ask you real quick, just because I get a little annoyed with some of this stuff too. So when you did your little talk with the community and stuff, did you ever look at real property values? You know, what did that do?
That was part of
that.
That was part of the part of the concerns that were raised by our residents was property values. We actually tried to work in an agreement for resolving subsequent issues for real property value with the developer. That, of course, didn't fly. But part of that is trying to assess the cause of changes to property values and trying to directly relate changes in property values to the installation, which I have to agree is it would be really hard to quantify. But it was part of the discussion. I think that property value, particularly in this area, That's kind of based on the buyers for the area, and it depends on who's looking at the property. For some folks, that might increase the values; for others, decrease. Yeah, so that's what I've got.
Thank you, Jeremy. Are there any other comments or questions from the room, Nancy?
Yes, I didn't want anybody to take this the wrong way, which was, it is not that old people can't do.
Thank you, Nancy.
It is just that I am feeling worn out. and as you could probably tell, I am noticing that I've been at my peak, and that's felt good. And I always said I wanted to leave while I was a success. Well, I still want to leave before anybody's figured out.
So
it's just to make that clear.
Thank you for the clarification, Nancy.
Well, I think you're smiling. Yeah, I've seen you smiling more right now.
Congratulations, Nancy.
Thank you.
Yeah, and before we adjourn for the day, I would like to again express my personal gratitude for all of you and your efforts that you're making across campus. Sometimes small steps lead to really big changes, and I think that, you know, there are opportunities where we can take big steps down the road. This year hasn't really been a big step year, and that's okay. The small steps that we are taking are making a difference, and a large part of that is due to each one of you and the efforts that you make on behalf of your constituents and on behalf of your colleges and units and affinity groups. So I just want to say again, thank you very much for your hard work. And with that, we will adjourn. Hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.